just feel like nothing is ever just strong anymore.
Really, you don't feel strong anymore?
3 years ago, I went to do a press-up in the gym and I literally can do one press-up. And I knew that day I had a problem.
I'm really excited to introduce today's guest. She's a double Olympic champion and one of the UK's most loved athletes.
I hate the ageing process, I really do.
In what ways?
I feel my problem is that I've always had a hangover being an international athlete about putting things in my body.
Right.
So I always had this negative connotation with HRT.
If you're not on HRT and you have 12 months with no bleed, then you are considered postmenopausal. But if you then have bleeding after that, you should get that investigated. Have you had that investigated?
No, that's not speaking to you. This is a self-help podcast here. This is my phone call.
Dame Kelly Holmes, I am so totally honoured to have you here. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm one of your biggest fans. Your sub 20-minute park runs are something that we talk about at home. But I think everybody knows who you are. But just, do you mind just talking through like your career so far and what your biggest achievements are and what you've loved and what you haven't necessarily loved?
Okay, so thank you for having me on, first of all. It's brilliant to be on here. So my career so far, for those that don't know, I'm a veteran, military veteran. I was in the military for nearly 10 years as a physical training instructor, joining a month before I was 18. So that was my first major career, I would say. I'd always had a dream of being in the army since I was 14.
Wow.
So that was something that I think it was a mindset reason for doing it. It's like, what can I do that's going to give me some purpose and a career? Because I wasn't very academic. So having achieved that, I went back to what my first dream was, to be an Olympic champion since I was 14. So during my military career, I got back into international athletics and had a 12-year international athletics career. I won 13 major medals at Commonwealth, European Worlds and Olympics, and finished my career with 2 gold medals at the Olympic Games, which finally got there at the ripe old age of 34.
Amazing.
And then since then, I've been a motivational speaker, corporates, and done many other things, which seems to be the case when you're an athlete or someone, you become this kind of commodity, that chameleon that has to try new things and find their feet and evolve. And I still think I'm on that journey.
And so just going back a bit to when you were at the height of your kind of Olympic prowess, like, how do you have any kind of insights as to how you, how do you do it? Because everybody who you're competing against wants that gold. Everybody is so determined, like the psychology behind it must be just unbelievable. Like, how do you get yourself to be the best? I can't get my head around. It must, like, how did you do it?
Well, I think there's a big word that people say, maybe don't always appreciate, is like the word resilience, because every sports person's journey is very, very different. So you could be a very young protege who continues to be successful and just gets better and better and better. And then they find themselves one of the best in the world at a very young age. But myself, having been a junior international athlete, then maturing in a military career, being quite a tough cookie woman, and gaining a sense of understanding of what it took to push my body to the nth degree, I used that as, I suppose, my sounding board and my base when I became an international athlete, because I had a strong mind. But I also had a point where it was about never giving up on myself. So like I say, I can talk very much around being an Olympian and what that takes, which I will do. But I think it also is about a character as well, you know, because during my career leading up to the Olympics, I'd gone to 3 other Olympic Games. My first one, I ran with a stress fracture, coming fourth, being pipped on the line by a tenth of a second. My second one, I was 30, being written off completely, having multiple injuries before that. Had 6 weeks of running only because I'd had a 12-centimetre tear in my calf muscle. I got a bronze medal. Then, of course, people were writing you off completely because that was quite old for a female middle distance runner at that time. Then I had other multiple things. I had 3 operations on my stomach. I had Lanche fever, tonsillitis through my whole career, you know, ruptured calves, torn Achilles. I had the whole lot. So it was about picking myself up and what is it? Why do I want to do this?
Yeah.
Why am I keeping going? And for me, it was about giving myself this sense of, like I said, purpose, but also belonging, thinking, this is who I am. If I don't do this, who else am I? Which is what I think a lot of people question right. along their journeys, but I had mine quite young. It's like, who am I if I'm not an Olympian? You know, I don't know who I am or what I will do. Wow. So I needed almost to do it. I needed to keep hold of the vision and the dream.
Did you know you could do it?
Yes. I did. I used to dream winning. You know, I feel like there's a spiritual element to my journey as well, but I absolutely had over multiple years dreamt of crossing that line in first. I just didn't know when it was going to come. Like, I felt it. I literally thought I was going to win one day. So on a good year, I would always visualize success and running fast. On a bad year, mentally, I would visualize not crossing that line. It just wouldn't come. The line wouldn't come to me.
Right.
So there's a lot of visualization that you do. But back then, in those days, it wasn't something that was really on the agenda. We didn't really have sports psychologists like they do now.
Right.
You know, we didn't have a focus on the mindset. It was all about the body.
So you were kind of doing that sports psychology to yourself without realizing that that's what you were doing.
Yeah.
And so would you have like literally a year where you felt like you couldn't do it, and then it would swing back to a year that you felt like you could?
Well, I always thought I could do well every year, but then, you know, you get an injury and there's a test. And every time there's a knockback, it's a test of character and test of your strength, and that belief mechanism comes into, like, again, what is the reason for keeping going? Because it'd be easier when you got injured to just go, let's get through the injury, you know, put the brakes on and let's wait till next year. But every year it's like, no, I have to complete this year, because you never know what's around the corner. You don't know what if it's too late.
Yeah.
You know, I used to always have this thing in my belly. It's like, if I'm questioning what if, that will bug me forever. So I'd rather do something, keep it going, and then I'll know the outcome, and then I can resolve in that whole, okay, well, at least I tried, didn't give up, I know the outcome, now I go again. The biggest point in clarifying that in my head was actually when I was 33 and I had a massive breakdown before I was getting ready for the World Championships in Paris. I mean, I literally lost the plot. I became self-harmer and didn't want to be here. And outside of those walls is the world sporting, you know, occasion happening. And in one sense, I don't want to be there. In the other sense, I want to be out in that big space, and I won a silver medal at that World Championships. And I was at the depths of despair. That moment, I knew I could win Olympics.
But have you noticed a change? Have you, as you've got older, like in the last 5-8 years, have you noticed things happening?
Not put it politely. Yeah, like you're going downhill.
Well, not necessarily. It could.
Without a doubt, you know. I mean, I'm not. I hate this thing around aging. Like, really does my head in. I don't want to age. I'm privileged to get older, because I think it's such a privilege to still be here and living and whatever. But I hate the aging process. I really do.
In what ways?
I feel both. I think that, in the body, obviously it's evident, you know, you keep breaking down, you can't do as much as you do. But then I quantify that with the fact that I'm not a full-time athlete anymore. I don't have physios around me every time, and my massage that I can see every minute, and, you know, I'm not eating as well as I could and all those things. So I know that that's a point where that's naturally going to deteriorate. But I do also think that I, over the past 3 years, when I started realising I had these body pains and things, that was something unusual to me.
Even though you'd had so many injuries and you had been functioning at such a high level, but your body pains now were worse than then?
They were just evident that it wasn't right. It's not normal. Because when your body is, like I say, at that nth degree, like really fine-tuned athlete, you know, injuries are a mechanism of that, aren't they? You kind of, something's not quite right, or, you know, you push so hard that it's weakened or whatever it is, but you deal with that one part.
So oh, I calf, see,
yeah,
I
it
see.
It could be my calf, it's right. Done. So I have to treat that. Whereas when it feels internal, and it feels like every part of your body is just aching and hurting, having been in tune with my body, I feel I'm more in tune with knowing what doesn't feel normal to
right.
me. So me having injuries is a normal part of being right. an athlete. But I wasn't injured every minute, you know, right. I just got over it and then I'll go again. So there's big periods where it was fine. But now, obviously, it's not like that anymore.
So if you ran a big race, like the race of your life, the next morning, would you just get up and feel normal?
Yeah.
Would you?
Yeah. But I probably would have done my ice baths and eaten properly and recovered immediately. And I would have done everything I needed to do to be an elite athlete. Now, of course, I don't. You know, I'm going to do a park run and then that's it. I'm off having a coffee and a cake and, you know, haven't stretched, haven't warmed down. Yeah. So we're all our own worst enemy. But I think the difference being is that, you know, there's certain things that even I train, you know, I look and I think, oh, I wish I was, you know, stronger than I am. I wish my body looked like it did before. I wish I could not keep breaking down, but I've always broken down. So I feel like, oh, it's just part and parcel, but it becomes more frustrating.
When now you say breaking down, what do you mean by that?
Well, ligaments, tendons. I just feel like nothing is ever just strong anymore.
Really? You don't feel strong anymore?
Like 3 years ago, I went to do a press up in the gym and I literally can do one press up.
And presumably you're used to you're somebody that is used to doing, like, I can't do one press up.
I was a physical training instructor in the army, you know.
I can do
quite a few press ups. I've always done it in my life. I've always been physically fit, very strong weights. Circuit training was my thing. Body weight training was my thing. Pull ups, everything. So me to not be able to do one press up is a problem. And I knew that day I had a problem. And I knew that it was more than just I'm weak.
Right.
You know, I feel like it wasn't that I was weak still training. It was that something else wasn't functioning.
And have you kind of pursued that? Have you, I don't know, spoken to a doctor about it? Or have you done anything about it? Or you kind of accepting that?
Well, so what happened is that So I think it was actually around lockdown time. So obviously we were in ourselves then a little bit more, weren't we? You know, everything was heightened with how we felt and what we did. And and so I think there's a combination of obviously the age that I was, which I was in denial about.
How old were you at the time?
What am I now? Oh my God, I'm so old.
You're really not.
So I'm 54 now. So I would say that, it was about 3 or 4 years ago. It's definitely towards that lockdown period anyway. And that's when I was training in the gym and I was thinking, something's not quite right. But I'd been training really heavy. So this is what happens. I was training really well. So we came into lockdown. I'm doing, you know, my core and I'm doing all the lives on Instagram and I built up a following and I'm just doing every morning. I'm thinking, God, I'm the fittest I've ever been. You know what I mean? I was literally this whole thing possessed. And then I was due to have an operation on my Achilles, which I had. And I managed to get that in one of the openings. And then I got back into fitness. And then it was about a year after. So let's just say it's 3 years ago from now. And I went into the gym and I started feeling this weird thing sort of in my inside, you know, like in my body. And I went in the gym and I went to do a press up.
All over or just in your forearms?
My arms. Yeah, it was my arms feeling really heavy and then my wrists. So I went to do a press up and like the pain going through my wrist, but inside it was. And I thought, oh, this isn't right. And then I think I just got in my headspace that I know my body well enough to know that that's not a normal feeling for me and to not be able to do a press up or be in pain when I did a press up. I thought, this isn't right. But I hadn't heard of anything to do with perimenopause, menopause. I mean, in my head, that's old people that got that. You know, I'm not there yet.
And you're not old at 50. You're not old.
Yeah, but I just felt like it wasn't in my psyche to understand what even that word was. I never heard of perimenopause before in my life.
So what did you do at that point?
So at the same time, I was also, I feel like I'm giving my whole life story out here. At the same time, I had to see a psychologist because I kind of lost the plot a little bit, had burnout. Yeah, a lot of things were going on in my life at that time. So I feel like I was in this mist of, I don't know who I am anyway and what am I doing, and feel like, you know, what's the point of everything? So there was a psychological thing happening and then this physical thing happening. Mm. So that wasn't good for me because I have to do exercise to feel good. Yeah. So when you have that combination, it's not really great.
And reflecting back now, do you see a connection between the two things? Do you think actually maybe what was happening both physically and emotionally was perimenopause, or...
To some degree, yes. I do think there was an element of it. I think there was, emotionally, there was a lot of other things going on. So it's really hard to then know what was what. Mm. And that was the worst thing, because I don't really know what was what. And it's only now you come out of different scenarios that you can kind of contemplate what might have been the cause of one or the other. But yes, definitely there was a connection. Now I know that I probably was perimenopause, a connection between the emotional state as well, which we know and you know very well. So so if I look at that, I do think there's a point where women would look at themselves and not feel good about themselves generally, and that will affect your body as well.
And I think especially because you had COVID overlying, which was just this massive extra factor, but it's what so many women say, there's that difficulty between identifying whether something is because of hormones or because of life or because of something going on in your life that is nothing to do with hormones, but it's just, and how much is hormones is so hard. And then COVID on top of things just made it a complete, like, nobody knew which way was up.
And I think that is the confusing thing for women. So getting over those periods of time, because I got COVID really bad. So I'd had an operation. I'd got COVID. I had it for 3 weeks really bad. I was out of it, you know, and then I had those pains and then I had the emotions. So I had so many things mixed up. I find it very hard to understand or know at what stage do I go, well, this must have been for this reason, or this is because your body's changing, or this because your hormones are connected with the emotion that then caused the issue that you had. So that becomes very confusing. Yeah. So I think when you have all of these factors, you're not clear on where do you go from there. So I do think now, though, the fact is that you can eliminate some of those potential issues by having more knowledge around menopause. You can go, well, it may be this, but at least I can try it, because other things you might not know how to or what. You know, I could speak to a psychologist on one side for something, but it might not then have changed how I felt on another thing. So, but you have to eliminate somewhere, don't you? So at least with knowledge, people can start eliminating now, which is at that time, I don't think I had any knowledge about the other side, the health side.
What did you do next?
Oh, yeah. So so the same psychologist said, well, why don't you also go and have, you know, speak to someone about your hormones? But it was all online at the time because, of course,
Nothing was open.
So I spoke to a lady who was also in her fitness and into her running. And she said, oh, yeah, it could be your hormones. I think she was gently telling me that I was probably...
Was it good? Was that good news to you, or was it not good news?
I think I just needed somebody to give me some information that I could at least think about. So I felt that the conversation was great because she was softly trying to say that maybe you could try something for your hormones. My problem was that I've always had a hangover being an international athlete about putting things in my body. So I always had this negative connotation with HRT and what that is, because I didn't have any knowledge on it. So I've always, when she suggested maybe I should try some HRT, firstly, I'm in my head thinking, no, because my mum was having it. I'm sure she was ancient, you know what I mean? I'm just having this childish conversation in my head.
Because it was associated with being older.
Yeah, that's just my hangover. Then it was, I don't really know what it is. You know, what is it? So I didn't understand at all what the hormone replacement therapy was.
Right.
Because in sport, people cheating would take stuff to, you know, promote hormone development or testosterone or whatever. So in my head, it's a no straight away because I would never put something into my body to enhance my performance. So I have that hangover. And then she was trying to explain that, but if you're like down here and not an athlete and you have no hormones in your body, all you're doing is bringing them to what you normally should have. And I'm trying to think, you know, that started sinking in a little bit. I think, okay, so I'm not an Olympian anymore, so get over it. So she suggested I did a blood test first thing, because I couldn't see her or anything else and I didn't really, I was getting confused. So she suggested I did this blood test. So I did a blood test and she said, well, all your results are at zero, basically.
Okay.
Everything was at zero.
So got as in gone. So,
yes.
Okay.
So I was like, well, what does that mean? So she said that I should probably go on pedestrian.
Yeah. And was that good news or was it not good news? How was that?
I think I felt that I wanted to try it because I didn't like the body pains that I was getting. My default was how I was feeling in my body, like as in I felt in pain all the time and I hated not being able to train because training was helping my brain.
Yeah.
So it was all very connected. So I felt that if I was to try what she was suggesting, then maybe that would help alleviate the main thing I had in my head was causing me the problem. Right. I didn't really connect all the dots with anything at that time. But I felt that if that was one avenue and that would alleviate at least my body pains, I could get back to training, then I'd feel better. So it's that cycle of self-help as well. So the honest truth is I did try it and I was confused. I just was getting it wrong. I just didn't. I don't know. She was saying two pumps here, three pumps here, take this tablet. I was like, inside, outside, I don't know. I lost it. I just didn't know what I was doing. And then I was taking sort of the gels and I just didn't feel it was helping what I felt I needed. Now, this is my own thoughts now. Obviously, this is now a couple of years on. So very quick story of that. I tried for a year to do the gels and the tablet and I just thought it's not helping me.
You didn't get any, the body pains didn't go, you didn't feel better.
I didn't feel like it was helping me, no. And I don't know then if that's because I wasn't getting the right amount or whether, because we're all very different, aren't we?
Do you remember how much you were using?
So two pumps of the gel, they rub in your arms and then one of those capsules. But I was sitting so confused of how long do I take it from? Do you have a gap? I don't know. Maybe I just couldn't psychologically deal with that as well at that time. So I feel I wasn't clear with what I was doing, if the honest truth of that. And I felt like maybe I needed an immediate feeling from what I was given because I'm now taking something I don't really want to take. Right, so I'm expecting like, okay, if I'm going to take this, it needs to do something good.
It's got to work quickly.
It needs to work, otherwise what's the point?
Yeah.
So then I started down the route of more collagens, et cetera, et cetera. And I went off and I've been off of it for now over a year. But I've also, having listened to you, I think, a few times, know that I've gone through that perimenopause. And I didn't even know that you were meant to be off your period for a year before you went through it. I've been off for a year and a half now, so I'm assuming, I don't know what, I'm through it, don't know. And then I started getting spotting and blood, and I feel very confused with the whole women's situations.
So have you had 12, you had 12 months with no period?
I've had about 18, 19 months with no period. And then a couple of months ago, I started getting a bit of blood.
Having not had any HRT in that 18 months?
No.
Okay. So if you're not on HRT and you have 12 months with no bleed, then you are considered postmenopausal. Mm-hmm. But if you then have bleeding after that, you should get that investigated. Have you had that investigated?
No, that's what I'm speaking to you. This is a self-help podcast here. This is our phone call.
Yeah, you should. When did that happen?
It was last month. And I'm also feeling that feeling of that I would be having before I had a period, but I'm not having one.
Right. Okay.
It was only spotted and stuff. It's not been lot at all.
Yeah. You should get that investigated.
Yeah.
So you can go to your GP and they will send you to see a gynecologist. Mm-hmm. They'll send you quite quickly, there's like a 2-week wait pathway for postmenopausal bleeding, essentially to pick up the very few mm-hmm. that have something going on with their endometrium. Mm-hmm. Most of the time, it's just you can get a when you lose hormones, you can get some thinning to the walls of the vagina, mm-hmm. And that can cause bleeding. Sometimes if there's little kind of abrasions on the cervix, that can cause bleeding. So all sorts of things can cause it. But we like to see you quickly and then just take a little look.
That's telling me off.
No. Does it feel like I'm telling you off?
No. I mean, I do feel like I need to now think, because I feel that I suppose where I'm at the moment is that take what I need for my body. I want to still stay strong. Yeah. I want to stay healthy. I don't want to, osteoporosis. I don't want to have any risks to my body knowing that I can do something, because I also am a person that I want to prove that you can still do really good things as you get older.
You can still do amazing things, Kate. Yeah.
That's it.
Do you still get the pains, or are they?
I think they've started to come back last sort of month or so.
So HRT, the thing about HRT is that the way it's prescribed, we prescribe it according to guidelines. And at the moment, we don't prescribe it for the prevention of anything like osteoporosis or heart disease. Whether that changes as opinion changes, it may well be, but it would be a bit of a contentious issue, because it's essentially saying that if you say prescribe HRT for every postmenopausal woman, it almost frames it as a disease,
exactly.
A disease state. And I don't think that's probably not the intention of the bodies that make guidelines. But we do know that HRT can help, firstly, with symptoms, particularly with the symptoms that you've been describing, like that kind of all over body pain and aches and strength. But also we know it helps with osteoporosis, and both in prevention, but also in treatment of and cardiovascular protection. So as women go into menopause, cholesterol metabolism and their sugar metabolism changes, and it makes you more likely to get heart disease. Now, not every woman will get heart disease, but if we live into our 80s, 90s, 100s, you'll probably live until about 120, then your vessels will, everybody's blood vessels decline. And it's like, well, how do we keep them in tip-top condition? And I think it's a conversation to be had. It's not, The guidance is very clear that you don't use it for prevention and not every woman will get it. But there is an argument that if everyone lives to 110, like you might, then if you want to use it, then it should be a discussion. But it is, as you described it so perfectly, and so many women do find it confusing. Like, there are different hormones to take on different days and different routes, and you've got to rub a gel on, you've got to remember to take a tablet, and do you take it for half the month, do you take it for the full month? Like, do you change the dose by yourself? Do you speak to the doctor about changing the dose? Like, what? And if it's not working, what do you do? And it's and it is a bit complicated. Yeah. And it's a bit of a hassle. And I think if you're concerned about aging, then the thought of doing that every day, it's just like this constant reminder that your ovaries aren't producing it anymore. So it's not that, it is a complex issue, which is why it's so lovely having these conversations, because everyone's different.
Exactly.
Everybody's different.
That's it. And I do think, from somebody from a fitness background as well, you're trying to promote women staying strong and doing more lifting and weight training to prevent a lot of the issues that we might get as we get older as well. But if women are finding it difficult to keep strong because they're aching and whatever, that again, you know, where does the narrative go with that conversation? Because I know that it's so important for women to start doing more strength training as they get older, even their mid-30s and onwards. Yet when you get to a certain point in life where you feel, God, you know, it's painful to do it or you just can't, then that's going to put people off doing the strength training, which they should be doing for everyday life.
Absolutely.
So, because I know that, you know, I can look at a weight and put on muscle normally, whereas now when I'm training, I just feel, I know the weakness has gone from one side of it, maybe because I'm not doing enough. So there's that whole thing, I'm maybe not training often enough to do that. But equally, is it because of the lack of hormones?
So you do find it harder to put muscle on, do you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or strength, or just the strength in it, I think. Yeah.
And if you don't, do you notice your strength decline, and then is it harder to then get back?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I'm probably, you know, I do understand that my levels of expectation are quite high of myself.
Once an Olympian, always an Olympian.
I do know that, but equally, you know, I've seen some inspirational women from around the world who, when they get older, are amazingly strong. So there's a capability that we all have to have do that anyway, or to get as strong as we can. But if there's something that's stopping us, that's the bit. So I want to find out from myself, is there something stopping me to be able to still be really good? Because I know I can be strong. I know I can still run fast, and I can naturally run fast. But if my ligaments and my tendons keep going on me all the time, literally my lower back or my, you know, ankles or something, and I'm thinking, okay, I know my body's had a history of this, but actually, is it becoming more and more regular that I'm breaking down?
Right.
I probably think it is. So I need to now, for me personally, is get to a point where I go, okay, so what else is underlying that I can do and treat so that actually I can perform better?
Would you like to explore HRT?
I think I'd like to know whether my body requires it and that I should be on it for health reasons. And then obviously for me, performance reasons, but for health reasons more than anything.
And when you say, I want to know if my body requires it, what would give you that evidence? Like, is there anything you look at? Are you thinking kind of a blood test or an opinion or?
I think when people see it down and seeing that, you know, there's evidence. I feel like you need evidence sometimes, you know, because my brain could go, whatever. But I feel like sometimes I need evidence. Like somebody goes, look, your normal level should be here.
Right.
And actually you're on zero. So right. You're not helping yourself at all.
I see.
And if you do not increase them, you're going to go even worse. In my brain, as who I am, needs to know where I'm at.
Right.
Because a feeling's one thing. But if I take supplements and I do things to try and keep healthy. You know, I have normalized in terms of I go out, I like a drink, I like my food or whatever. But I do try and keep some healthy balance in there with supplements or collagens or drinks or whatever. But how much is that actually helping me? I don't know.
Right.
If I didn't take it, I know I'd be worse. You know
right.
what I mean?
Yeah.
So I am doing other things outside of not taking HRT to alleviate the pains. Because when I did start going on the collagen route, it really helped me.
Right.
It really did help me. And I just feel that I'm now feeling like, do I need something else? But maybe, again, it goes back to my default of being in tune with my body a little bit more.
So in terms of evidence, in the perimenopause, it's very hard to provide evidence because hormones are all over the place. So if you do a blood test one day, it's going to be very different to 5 days later. And sometimes you might get high levels of estrogen, but it doesn't mean that HRT won't help. But when you're postmenopausal, then your ovaries are not functioning. So we know that you're going to have very little estrogen around. Sometimes you see a little bit of ovarian kind of activity in the form of a blood test isn't quite as low as you would expect. But on the whole, you would expect to see low levels, but we don't use them diagnostically. We go very much on the history. So, you know, the fact that you didn't have a period for 12 months mm-hmm. would tell me that if you wanted to use HRT, it would be appropriate. If you wanted evidence in the form of a blood test, which some women do, mm-hmm. and I understand that. It's I don't want to do anything that is not necessary. Kind of show me, prove it to me. Yes, but that's okay. But you just need to make sure that somebody who understands blood tests is explaining them to you, and to know that, you know, things like testosterone fluctuate. There's another hormone that your brain pumps out to tell your ovary to get going, which is one of the markers of where you are in menopause. But it doesn't always go up. So you could have a normal FSH, and that wouldn't give you the evidence, if you see what I mean, that you needed HRT. So I think it's a question of if you want to eliminate symptoms and you want to try it and you want to explore the potential health benefits, then using HRT would be completely appropriate once we've investigated that little bleed that you had.
Yeah, and I suppose a couple of things with that, you know, the conversation around testosterone's been quite sort of controversial in one way, and not knowledge, because, you know, it's not made for women, it's a male testosterone, is that right? That's what I hear. And again, that's a thing that elite athletes would have used to, again, have enhance their performance, which, again, I know that's not right now, but is testosterone a factor in women for their strength? And is it something, because some people say they've gone on it and it's like changed their life, and some people say I have, but I've come off of it for a reason. What's your view on that?
So testosterone in female athletes is used in what we call supra female levels. So they will have their own testosterone that their own ovaries and adrenals are making, and then they use testosterone over and above that to perform for performance enhancing, like muscle, laying down muscle and speed and stamina. What we do in postmenopausal or perimenopausal testosterone replacement is just to replace it to within, you're still within those female, normal female physiological levels. We're just taking it off the floor a bit from where if it's gone down. It doesn't, so testosterone doesn't fall off a cliff at the menopause. There is a slow decline from mm-hmm. your 20s. And it's a hotly debated area. The testosterone there's two different types of testosterone that we replace, that we use in replacement. There is the male product that was designed for men, but we just use it in female doses. So we cut the dose by about, we use about an eighth of the dose. Mm-hmm. There is a female product, but it's not available on the NHS. It's the same hormone. Right. It's just in a different, you know, it's like a different brand of moisturizer. It's the same very base, but it's just dressed dressed up and dosed differently. Yeah, so the female one's in a pink tube, uh-huh. and the dose within the amount of cream is appropriate. Whereas for the women, for the male product, you have to titrate it down.
Do you think it's beneficial for menopausal women?
Sometimes. So I don't think that you need to, that every woman needs it. And at the moment, the guidance is that you use testosterone in women who have already been estrogen replaced and are have symptoms of a very low libido who also have low testosterone. So we do a testosterone blood test to check to see where that was. Mm-hmm. That's where the evidence is at the moment, but we don't have a huge amount of evidence for the other benefits of testosterone, which are discussed. So, you know, things like improving muscle mass, bone strength, stamina, power, cognitive function, and that joie de vivre feeling, that there's an awful lot of symptoms that testosterone could potentially help with.
I think I need testosterone. I think I might need some of that right now.
Well, we can explore it. We can definitely explore it. But you replace the guidance is you replace estrogen first, because if you don't replace estrogen, then you replace somebody's testosterone, what likely happens is that testosterone is just converted to estrogen anyway by the mm-hmm. body. So it's almost a waste of time. And you have that the other problem that if you're very low on estrogen, then probably your vulval and vaginal tissues are not going to tolerate your increased libido. So it's just kind of doing things in the right order.
And can women choose to go on HRT for a period of time, come off again, then go back on? Or is it something that once you go on, people have, you know, your recommendation, they stay on it forever? Because I think that's quite a hard thing for people to know, that for the rest of their life, they have to continue to go through that, take, you know.
Yeah. You don't have to, yes. So you don't have to, you can stop it suddenly. You don't have to wean yourself off it. We advise that you give it a go. So if you try it for a week or two and get side effects, then most of the time those side effects disappear. So it's worth giving it a go and
what
seeing.
Are they?
It very much depends. So it can be things like breast tenderness, nausea, headaches, mood disturbance, bleeding. Those are the common side effects. But we are only putting hormones back in mm-hmm. that you have already had.
Yeah.
It's not a drug per se where you can get a whole host of kind of drug reactions. It's a bit different because it is just a hormone. They are hormones that you have had already. Mm-hmm. And then there is no commitment to staying on it for the rest of your life either. The guidance says that you establish somebody on HRT, say you get great improvement, but then after a period of time, you think, well, maybe, you know, maybe I should take the dose down, or maybe I should think about coming off it. Every year you have a review and you discuss the pros and cons of staying on it mm-hmm. with the pros and cons of coming off it or of reducing it.
Yeah.
And it's everybody's different.
Yeah, and I do feel that was something, you know, once you start taking that review process, because again, if I was thinking about getting better in sport and I had a schedule, you know, you're always reviewing that schedule because it might not be, you might have performed better, you've got stronger, you're fitter. And then if you put the same plan in place that you started 6 months prior, you've made all that progress. How can you then carry on with the same plan sort of thing? So it's that kind of whole, how many times do women need to be reviewed? You know, is that something that you advocate for women?
Definitely. And that's it's a lovely way of putting it. So we would typically start somebody on HRT and then see them after 2 or 3 months, see how they're going. Maybe do some blood tests, especially if they're considering testosterone. And then if the estrogen bit was sorted and they wanted testosterone, then you would add it at that point, and then you would see them again after 3 months and see them whenever they had any sort of issue. But then you can quite quickly, if somebody tolerates it all very well and they get the symptom relief that suits them, then we just see them every year.
Yeah.
But it's very individual. Different things crop up at different times. And
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned about ovaries and cysts. So during my athletics career, I had 3 operations on my stomach as well. I had ovaries that twisted around my fallopian tube. So I think I had one taken out. I had real bad, what do you call it? I don't know what they actually called it, but basically the gynecologist described it. If you had 2 bits of cardboard and you had glue and you went like that, that was what had happened. And so I'd had big
adhesions. Are they adhesions?
Yeah, well, it's sort of like he said, it was sort of an infection that just basically yeah, created these sort of holes all in there. So I had all of that.
From within the uterus or from within the pelvis?
Yeah, so I had like big, is when they did the big old operations. Oh. And he said at the time it would have been similar to having, if I'd obviously been given birth, but he had to move around the muscle because I was still competing. So he couldn't cut, so he had to cut and then go into muscle. But it was a real big infection down there that I had to have all changed up. And then I had to have, I had cysts on ovaries, lots of history of that. Obviously back then, and this is probably growing for women, I had really bad periods, like horrendous periods. I literally thought I was being murdered most of the time. It was so, so bad. But of course, no one talked about periods either. You know, as you get older, does any of the effects from when you're younger and the periods and things that happen down there, would that have any effect on women,
probably,
or is it just as the time?
So as long as there wasn't something that caused the bad, so unless there was something like fibroids or endometriosis or adenomyosis, then it's unlikely to. Do you know why you had heavy periods? Did you get a diagnosis?
No, I suppose because I was, you know, when you're in the military, no one else in the military, so no one back then. There was no women's health conversation at all.
Isn't that incredible?
Yeah.
So you just kind of had to get on
with
it.
Yeah, yeah, that was quite horrendous. And then obviously being an athlete, I used to have really bad situation where I'd be crawling off the track with pains. Like I felt like my insides were ripping down there. It was so bad. But again, nobody knew what to do because I was younger. No one really investigated.
But what happened if you had like a big race?
After the race, I would
You'd run your race?
Yeah, so it'd always happen in training and then after racing. So after every single race, I'd have to be carried to the doctors having muscle relaxation injections and whatever. I'd be bleeding, I'd be sick, I'd be everything after race, even after Olympics.
Really?
Yeah, so no one knew about all that. Excuse me. So it wasn't like the easiest journey to get 2 gold medals. So some reason I wanted it. But yeah, I just wondered like, you know, how women can have, because you don't really, you just go through life, don't you? You deal with what happens in your life as you go through. And then at what stage should women have it, regardless of, they get to a certain point and think, oh, you know, I need hormone replacement. Should you have more checkups down there anyway, do you think, for different age, if you've had something going on, is there certain points that you should have more investigation? Because could that, if I have HRT, for example, and I don't know what happened back then, I don't know whatever, could that have an effect on me?
So if you had big fibroids, then as a cause for bleeding and pain like that, then it would be useful to know, because fibroids can grow when you use HRT. It doesn't necessarily mean that you can't use it, but it is useful. It's useful to know. But we would know that because we're going to scan you anyway.
And that's what you do. I was just thinking, you know, because as you go through life, you sort of forget some of the things that you've had because you just deal with them at the time.
Yeah.
And you don't relate them to anything else. It's kind of like, well, it's happening, so it's happening, isn't it? And then you have bad periods and, okay, I have bad periods.
Did they stay bad until they stopped?
Pretty much, yeah, I had a really bad period. Like I'd go at a hotel room and I would literally flood the bed. I'd have to wash all the sheets in the bath, hang them up to dry during the night because I was so embarrassed. It was like bad.
Gosh.
But that's why I think like women, you know, when we, like I'm glad that I work in corporates now, I'm glad that they're starting to put even the basics of tampons and pads in the toilets for women because, you know, you could be at work and then that's it. You know, you don't even want to get up, you know, you've got to put your jacket around your thing and that. So it's just women's understanding of their hormone changes. I think these conversations are so important and to hear all sides of the spectrum so no one's sort of alone, because I would never, you know, I'd never have said anything about that.
Wow. I mean, that is just, it's incredible, isn't it? What you have to accept as a woman, because women's health issues are just, even it's a health issue, you know, if it was your arm or your leg or your lung, you'd do something about it.
Yeah.
Or how someone would, you know, tell you to do something about it.
But... So I don't think anyone has those conversations, do they? It's like, oh, how bad are your periods? Are they really bad? Are they not bad? Or, you know, you just don't have those conversations.
And you didn't have those conversations with, like, fellow Olympians?
Oh, God, no.
Really?
No, no one really did. You know,
even though you were all kind of dealing with it.
Yeah, I suppose you didn't. I think some, I heard, went on the pill and things. So once, years ago, a doctor... Oh, because of the pains I was getting after race, said, oh, we'll try the pill. But the pill was awful. I mean, I just ended up bleeding like nonstop for ages and ages.
Yeah.
And I just thought, no, I can't do that either. So there's a lot of women that are still dealing with issues, and we do crack on with it, which is great. But
it is amazing that people just pretend it doesn't happen.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Because most people don't get up if they're, you know, having period pains, you don't want to get out of bed sometimes, but it's that bad, do you? And then you can you do some exercise, you feel a bit better. So you kind of push yourself.
And you had an Olympic final.
I had all of those, to do. But I feel like it's, this is what I've got to my life now, is I feel I want to stay fit. I want to compete. I want to probably compete more than I did in my mid-30s when I retired. You know, for 10 years, I wasn't really into it psychologically. I'd done all my sport and fitness to a high level, and then I've had that middle part, but this part of year where I'm changing, my body's changing, but I want to stay fit. That's why I feel that, you know, this conversation is important, and also women who like to stay fit finding out more about what they can do to help themselves hormonally, because it's a driver and it's a positive for so many women to do something active and to stay psychologically fit, happy, you know, vibrant in a later life rather than backwards. And I think you do get a certain age where a lot of people start looking at their well-being far more, and maybe we should have started it earlier.
Yeah.
Right. So one of the questions I do have is around women of different ethnicities, whether there's any differences to hormone treatment, because I'm mixed race, my mother was white, but I don't really know the other side of my family, so I don't know if anyone's ever had effects that are different.
Definitely. So we know that different ethnicities experience different symptoms, and they also have their menopause start at different times, and their menopause symptoms can last for different lengths of time. So there are huge differences, and some women as a group don't experience symptoms severely typically, so particularly Asian women, Japanese women tend to have easier menopauses than other women, say in Europe or in the Indian subcontinent or in Africa, and so there are huge differences. How society treats menopause is also different, and so depending on what society you're in, your experience will be also different, depending on whether it's supportive, depending on whether it's considered negative, positive. So in some societies or cultures, menopause is considered a positive step or something to go through, because you're then considered, you transition to becoming an elder and you're wise and you're kind of almost like kind of like a matriarch. And in others, you're, because your fertility has gone, you're considered less worthy. And so it's so diverse. All of it is so diverse, and also nobody's considered it massively important enough to research it. So we don't have a huge amount of data on it, but I think that will be an area that we know much more about, because when you understand cultural and racial differences, you can then know how to help women more.
Yeah.
And I think that will definitely be the aim over the next decade or so. I think we'll know so much more.
Yeah, I do think that's important, isn't it? Because like you say, everybody's background's very different.
Absolutely.
No one really knows what that background is, or the culture, or the racial impacts of it, and what that affects on your body as well. Because I'm sure, you know, if a black woman presented to you who's got a black kind of culture, history, background, everything, are their bodies different? Are their makeup different? I don't know, and I suppose that's
I think lots is different, so that I think their bodies are different, but the culture is also different, and so their experience will be different. So if the average age in one group is 46 and the average age in another is 51, then you know that's it's quite a five years, you're almost at a different stage in your life when you're 46 as opposed to 51 going through it, aren't you? So I think we definitely need to know more in order to help women as best we can. You've done so many exciting things, but I'm guessing you've also got some really exciting things coming up. What are you looking forward to over the next couple of years?
So I've started to run women empowerment events called the Athena Effect. It's something I'm passionate about, women believing that they can do whatever they want to do, set themselves goals, ambition. But I also feel it's important for women to support women. I think, you know, at some stages in life, you've got to feel that you've got anyone around you that can build you up and, you know, push you forward. So that's something important to me, to grow that. Yeah. You came in my first little try.
What an honour.
You were great. And we've made some great friendships
from that, haven't we? Yeah.
And I think that's what's really important for me, to meet people from wherever, people that would never feel that they connect with, to suddenly just feel, oh my gosh, something in common, or just helping each other.
There was a little bit of magic in that room, wasn't there? The Kelly magic.
there was a lot of magic from a lot of fantastic women. So I'm going to do that. And, you know, continue to set myself challenges, hopefully. If I can sort this body out, I can keep going. I like climbing, trekking mountains. I've got to still keep my park run down. You know, I'm still trying to stay around that 20 minute. I'm a little bit competitive at park run, if you imagine that. Not really. I'm always aiming to be the first woman home. And certainly the first in my age group. If it's first in my age group, it has to be both men and women age groups, not just women. So, yeah, I've still got goals.
Kelly, we've also got some listener questions.
Oh.
If I read them out, are you happy to kind of help me answer them?
I'll do my best.
Alice says, I am in my early 30s and my mum is having an absolute nightmare with menopause. Every annoying symptom you can think of, she's got it. Is it inevitable that I will follow in her footsteps? And is there anything that I can do now to help out future me? So we touched upon that a little bit earlier, didn't we? Did you get the opportunity to talk to your mum at all about menopause or her experience?
No, I mean, it certainly wasn't a conversation at all around that. You know, I do know my mum had a hysterectomy in her, I think I'd say, mid to late 40s, but I didn't know why. I would never have asked her why either. I think what's great is that a 30-year-old is asking these questions, because this has never happened before.
Yeah.
Because they wouldn't have related them to what's going to happen to them as they get older. So the fact that she's kind of identified there are issues with her mother and she's seeing those symptoms, hopefully is going to help that younger generation, isn't it?
And also she knows that her mum's symptoms are menopause, so presumably she's been told, which is again like probably wouldn't have happened.
No, massive progress
20 years ago.
I mean, the symptoms though, they are something that I find interesting, and only having, you know, listened to you and other people around those, because I do remember I've got quite a few friends that we're all the same age, and, you know, let's say in our late 40s, they're all sitting there sweating and whatever, and I'm just going, you're getting old. Because I'm not, you know, I'm not going red, I'm not sweating, I'm not getting anything that they're getting. You know, I feel like they're grumpy, they're all of this, and I'm like, well, you can keep it, I don't want it. You know, but then I found it's like insomnia and these body aches and all the other symptoms, you know, that, who knew? And there seems to be this list that just goes on and on and on.
It gets longer and longer and longer, doesn't it? Yeah, the multiple symptoms of menopause. Yeah, I mean, there is just so many. From top of your head to the tips of your toes, estrogen affects every organ system. And insomnia is a classic one.
I do have one quick question. Do you think we have to be careful that we have so much conversation now around menopause, and we can put everything in the box and say it's all menopause? It could hide maybe something else that's going on in women that should be more investigated.
Definitely. So it's very easy to attribute any symptom, literally any symptom, to menopause. And it is important that women and and doctors understand kind of what the red flag symptoms are. So, for example, if you have palpitations, palpitations are very common in perimenopause, but they can also represent another underlying health condition and they need investigating. You know, bowel habit change, if you, you know, you can have, you know, either constipation or diarrhea associated with perimenopause hormones, we know affect gut motility. But if you, if you've got a bowel habit change, it needs to be, it needs to be, you know, you need to see your doctor about it and potentially investigated. So absolutely, there is a danger to attributing everything to menopause. We do need to. So we used to say you've got to have your menopause radar out, and you do absolutely have to have your menopause radar out, but you also need to not forget the other things that can be going on. Just going back to what Alice was saying about being in her early 30s and like whether her menopause will be the same as her mother's. So the answer to that is potentially yes. So things do tend to run in families. Early menopause tends to run in families. Late menopause can run in families. And symptoms can be similar, but they don't have to be. It's like the rules with menopause is there are no rules. So sometimes so they'll, I know, sometimes they'll follow a pattern, but then sometimes they won't. Yeah, that's menopause. And then we've got one more from Anna, who says, I've never been an active person and haven't done anything resembling exercise since I left school. Now my menopause symptoms have been getting worse. I've been wondering if exercise would help. What would you recommend? And can we avoid anything that will make me sweat?
Well, do I think it's important? Absolutely. I think everyone should start thinking about moving more, exercise, for so many positive reasons. I'm a big advocate of strength training, which I think is great for women in terms of that whole round kind of how we hold yourself, trying to eliminate some of the deteriorating factors of muscle loss, etc. And then obviously if you're then starting to move more and get, you know, you will find the effects if you don't keep strong. You know, from someone that's gone zero to trying to go to hero, there's going to be a lot of issues that happen if you don't stay strong as your base. So if you get that right, then actually you can move your fitness levels and performance and the type of things you do a lot further on. So I do think it's important that people start. The sweating is probably down to you. If you're going to push yourself in the gym, you're likely to get a bit of a glow. most women don't sweat because they just sweat, don't push yourself hard enough to sweat anyway.
Right.
And actually, I don't sweat when I train.
Do you not?
No.
So you finish a part run not sweating?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that's a bit strange, isn't it?
Wow.
But I just don't. So I don't know why that is. You know, I have a glow or whatever, but I don't like pouring off of me. So not everybody in fitness sweats, and that puts off a lot of people from doing gym as well. They think, oh, as soon as I exercise, I'm just going to sweat loads. Not everybody does.
Right. Okay, that's interesting. Yeah, I mean, I think that's a really good point about when you, I think people just, if they make a decision that they're going to get fit, they often just go too hard, too fast and either injure themselves or decide that it's too uncomfortable and they don't do it again. Whereas if you start, if you build up slowly, just that little bit of patience over a few, doesn't take that long, does it?
No, it doesn't. And actually they say, you know, you can do a really good workout in 20 minutes and be done, you know, but I think it is that starting is the hardest thing for most people that have never had fitness as an ongoing part of their life. And then actually when you do start, you do feel better in yourself, but you've got to set yourself tangible goals. You've got to, you know, kind of, why are you doing it? Why do you need to keep fit? Most people that haven't done anything suddenly go, oh, I've got to be fit. There's a reason why you said that.
Yeah.
You know, you're either out of breath, you don't like the way you look, you're feeling weaker, you're getting issues somewhere. So you've already established that you need to do it. So then you've got to go, well, how far do you want to go? What's your little goal? Set yourself a target and then do it.
Yeah.
Because the quicker you do it, the more fruitful it will be as you get older.
Yeah. And just being accountable, but not setting those goals so high that you're just never going to achieve them.
No. I mean, there's so many great things out there, programs like the Couch to 5K, those who say, I can never run. Well, if you put one foot in front of the other, you're running in most people's books because you're going faster than not doing anything.
I've seen so many success stories with that Couch to 5K.
Yeah.
It's brilliant, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think that's even like the absolute minimum that those that have no real idea on what their fitness journey.
Yeah, I can visualize it now. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I've talked quite a lot about different symptoms that you might be experiencing, but you may have more questions. If you do, then please put them under the comments section of whichever podcast platform you're listening to this on. Please feel free to email me on naomipotterpodcast@gmail.com or post them in the comments below.